This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2023, held at Faith Builders on August 1 to 4.
It's 3 o'clock. That means we can start. There's still two people that aren't here, but I don't know who. Honestly, I'd have to look at my chart. Peter's not. He always says no. I don't know. Don't know. Everybody I look for is here. So today, this is your third day of having water hoses just dumped on you. So I assume you're sleepy and kind of zoned out. So we're not going to get as much covered today, but you're going to interact more, which hopefully will keep you awake and thinking. I have papers, which if you write on, you will not sleep. Inverse effects. So write for your own sake and also just write for keep yourself thinking. So today I'm going to end up having you guys work in groups. So for your first group, probably 3 or 4 people would be kind of a good group size, I would say. For the first time I put you in groups, go ahead and run around the room. If you know some people that kind of like are adjacent to your field of interest, principals, if you want to get together, that kind of thing, go ahead and move around just right away. If you're happy with who you've got, it's probably, you're probably sort of set beside people you know, so maybe that's just what to do. But whatever, I'm just saying jump up and run around that first time. Because I looked over the cards again for the third time or whatever I did, there's a couple things that came up pretty consistently, and they're the headings on these note pages. So disrespect, self-worth, motivation, adoption, we already talked about some, and then disorders at the bottom, and I want to talk a little bit about direct instruction and behavior, so that's why that's a heading. So we'll probably kind of go through them in that order. We talked about disrespect quite a bit yesterday, and I'd like to just kind of tie that bit together by making it on the screen. So a couple things as I looked up, like secular learning, if you want to call it that, so research into disrespect and ways to address it. There's a couple things that they said to think about, one of which is competitive settings. And I think we talked about like kind of creating competition type things as a motivator yesterday. Beware that while it is an effective motivator, sometimes it does breed disconnection and competition. And you have the winners and the losers of most competitions. And so that can actually lead to a setting that promotes disrespect. The winners can be pretty good at disrespecting because they're the winners. And the losers naturally aren't any good, so they will disrespect to get some attention or that sort of thing. Another thing that I found in reading is that students who see their authority, and we sort of talked about this, but see their authority as legitimate. So you are the teacher and I recognize you as an authority. And then the teacher-student relationship then, so you are the authority, the teacher, and then our relationship is positive, that really keeps disruption down. So what does that mean? This is where I'm going to break you into groups and you kind of come up with some ideas. I like the way that, I don't know where I stole that from, what article, but that's probably a really close to direct quote. But I like the way that was put. So how can I be a legitimate authority? The kids recognize that and I recognize that. And still have a positive teacher-student relationship. And we talked about maybe some of what that means yesterday. And then the reason we talked about it yesterday is because it tends to make kids less disruptive. We already talked about that. But I liked that I found that in literature. So just kind of to round this off, and honestly, I think the last question can be basically answered from stuff we talked about at the end of the day. I think a couple of us extended on beyond class, so there's some specifics. But what I'd like you to do now is everybody stand up, and then you don't have to stand exactly right now. You're going to stand up, and then you're going to, thank you for trying to. And then you're going to move around if you want to. If you don't, just sit back down. Okay, but so everybody stand up. Find your group of three or four people. You could all walk out of your row and back in. That way anybody can leave that wants to. So I want you to come up with, where should we be concerned about disrespect? In what settings or between what people? Have at least three answers on your page. And get them from each other as well. So, I mean, yesterday we talked about students respecting their teachers with their work. There's one. We definitely talked about that yesterday.
You all have three already?
We do.
So much disrespect is caused by the, like, when my students are struggling with it, how much of it is caused by me? Because I just, like, if I had been a more experienced teacher, I felt like I
don't
know how to handle it,
though. Yeah, well, I can get to that a little while later, but, yes, but that doesn't, does that, let me say it as a question, does that give them a license to do something wrong?
Yeah.
So, you weren't the perfect little police or, you know, teacher to make sure they were perfect. But that doesn't mean you have to try.
Yeah.
And that they didn't make their own choices to do whatever.
Sure.
I get a little concerned when people step in too much in general, because kids need to learn to self-regulate. So if you as a teacher are needing to do too much for them, it's kind of a regulation of their behaviors, then the minute they go outside the class or that structured setting, what are they going to do? Unfortunately, I think that's why we have so many behaviors. One of the big reasons we overprotect, overguide, overparent.
Yeah, we're constantly there. We try to keep catching.
Kids are remarkably good at solving their own problems. It doesn't really end beautifully sometimes, but they do solve their problems. So at daycare, social emotional learning is a lot of what you're thinking about at a 2 or 3 year old stage. And I do monitor how much teachers are helping solve problems.
Like you're saying, between students.
Between students, yeah. I don't know. Were you talking a little bit about the teacher-student respect as well?
Both.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, both matter, but teacher-student's a little bit different in this case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, between students. Like, I want you to solve your own problem. I mean, it's really, really out of control.
Yeah. Great. Sometimes it doesn't make it worse when you get involved.
I think that's fair to say. Not always, but a good percentage of the time, probably.
I struggle with a child that wants, like, I put on my brakes. He struggles with a lot of anger. Mm-hmm. And so it always comes out at other kids on the playground or in the break. And in all honesty, you have to pull him away sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah, right. Yeah. In that physical sense. But then, like you were saying, like, how do you let him? Because what we do then, like, the easiest thing to do is that you just sit there.
Mm-hmm.
Just sit. But he can't, it doesn't come out. He can't get it out. And I don't know how you do that in a school setting. Because, I mean, that's also partially because you're in charge of all the students, and so to let a child release anger over here.
Safety needs to matter,
Okay, we're going to stop here in about a minute or two with this discussion and choose a spokesperson to share a little bit about what you are talking about. It's not going to be all the things, obviously. Okay, so turn just sort of so you can see each other. You don't completely have your back to the whole crowd. That way you feel more comfortable and respected. I forgot one other thing that I was going to say in terms of research. So our kids talk a lot about things not being fair, or at least I assume yours do. And I have taken to saying that I don't really expect things to be fair. Why do you have that expectation? And kids kind of want things fair, but back to the research, fairness actually didn't matter as much in terms of respect if there were positive teacher-student relationships. So as long as the students and you have a good relationship, the fairness of the activity of the discipline of the whatever didn't really matter in terms of outcomes. That relationship mattered more. So all this to say, relationship and respect are very closely related. All right, so who wants to be first? Spokesperson first. I'm just going to pick on you if you don't. That's real easy. Go. Just and take like 1 minute, 30 seconds, whichever. Yeah.
We talked about a few areas where disrespect comes up. One of those was students' response to assignments. What they do with the assignment you give them. How they respond to it. Do they throw it in the trash can? That kind of thing. We also talked about students being okay with other students' choices. Picking games. Are they okay with the game that's being played? Do they have to decide? Talk about goals and so on. Another thing we talked about was awareness of people in general. When people come into your school, do they show them respect? Are they running around them? Are they bumping into them, throwing balls into their food and making them have lunch? What is that type of thing? And we've also talked about disrespecting themselves. Is their self-talk like? Do they down themselves all the time? And also disrespecting school property. Mm-hmm. Whose property is it? Theirs or is it community's?
Thank you. And a bunch of you talked about a bunch of those as I walked around, so you guys can all shorten. The last person's only have one thing to say. Who wants to wait for last? Who's next? Go ahead. Right here in the front.
Yeah, we talked about a lot of the same things that he did, a little more general, student to student. Respect in the staff, teachers to parents, respect there.
That's a big one.
An impact on the students. Respect for institutions, your church, mm-hmm. if it's a church school. Respect for authority, and also how we respond to authority as teachers. We respond to those above us. The respect should also go from teachers to students as well. Mm-hmm.
Good.
Talk just a little bit about teachers disrespecting board members when they feel manipulated. And this is similar to parents, just put no. Mm-hmm. And name-calling, taunting, kind of like what you mentioned with winners and losers. It's easy for the loser or someone that's dumb to pick on somebody that they think is a little bit dumber. Mm-hmm. Just reinforcing the other kid's mind how dumb they are. Not bad, that's me. And also, you know, that's targeting people's weaknesses. Sure. Just try to lift ourselves ahead. Mm-hmm. Mostly in the student range. Mm-hmm.
We do it as adults too, though, to be fair. Okay, who's next? You guys, go. Who's your spokesperson?
The three things we highlighted was schoolwork, body language, and fellow students. So the student-to-student was already talked about, and the schoolwork, the attitude behind it. You talk about like just chucking it, or how sloppy it is, mm-hmm. how well done. Body language, again, what's their response when an assignment is given, when someone else picks the game. How attentive they are, the body language in that when you're actually teaching. I think that was the big overarching thing you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Interesting thing about body language. Some schools, probably none of yours, but require you to sit certain ways. Which, anyway, I found that in learning about different schools around the world. That was one in England that I was learning about. Like, I forget how it was. You had to have your hands down, at ready, I think, and sit there with your head up. Anyway, interesting. Back here. Yeah, your group.
We're working with younger students, so we talked about student to student. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the basic things that we talked about was how we have to talk with each other about how every person has work.
Mm-hmm.
That affects how they think about themselves and about other people and about authority. And so maybe that's a basic principle to start with for younger children.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also talk about teachers respecting children, even the hardest children.
And seeing the value of that, or the worth of them as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Number of you are started talking into this worth thing, which is fine. You can talk about that. That's where we're going next. I think I like it better going the way we're going. Start with respect and then talk about worth, because we're already going there. Group over here.
We were talking more about solutions to disrespect mm-hmm. issues. One of them, we as teachers need to separate student from the problem
mm-hmm.
and see them as someone valuable. That's one thing that we also talked about this morning. Modeling respect. We as teachers need to model the respect for those in authority above us before we can expect students, before we can expect to earn respect from students. Student interaction, not tolerating, downplaying, or just different things there among students to try to help cultivate the atmosphere of respect for each other.
Okay. Group back here.
Yeah. We talked about respect on the playground, so I guess that goes with the game pick or whatever, and also respecting each other's space.
That's one that came up.
Also, the frustration that happen or the disrespect that can happen between diverse learners, so like the fast learners with the slower learners, the disrespect that can happen mm-hmm. there, or like jokes or inappropriate attention getters.
Mm-hmm. I was going to talk about something over here, but I forgot it, so that's fine. Sorry about my ADHD. The thing of different speeds of learners, I think we'll talk about more, but feel free to bring that up in maybe our worth discussion. Think about how speed affects your worth. That sounds interesting. But we do think that, not purposefully think that way, but we do think that way, that somehow speed create some sort of something about kids. Yeah, I like that thought. And as some of you mentioned, some of you are thinking about an answer to the same question in a very different way. That's just great reason that I use groups here or there at school. You all are going to go a certain direction in your group, and it will be a little different. And then when you all share together, you learn a lot more. We got a lot more out of this than if we'd have had one group discussion. That's just a teaching tip, I guess. All right, so the next thing I want to talk about is self-worth. And I guess I kind of am leading. Are any of your students smart? Raise your hand if you have smart students. I don't allow my teachers to say that their kids are smart. Why would that be? Or, yeah.
Can I say something dumb?
There's some divide, right? So if you're not smart, you must be dumb. All right, what else? Any other reasons I might not allow that?
Most students would have a strong point just because their strong point is in academics. It's something that they're not qualified or have abilities in other areas.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I've noticed in some of my slower students, they're much better athletic at sports than while some of my fast students are my pretty smart students.
Mm-hmm. What does smart mean? Maybe we should define that a second. What does smart mean when we say I have a smart student? You sort of, I think, hit it, Joe, but yeah. It's, mostly I see smart means fast at whatever task I put in front of them. And fairly capable of doing like kind of book work, what I'd call book work. And those two things make a smart student. They may be terrible at building a house, playing a game, relating with other people, but they're smart because they're fast and they can do book work. And now we've just regulated all those other people that are good at some, not really good at some other things, into dumb, which does terrible things for self-worth. That is why I don't allow smart. And I probably care about some other words, but that's one that when I hear smart, I just have a problem real quick. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I was a smart student or not. I don't think I was. So I think I don't have any personal experience with this, except for probably that I was dumb then. anyway, so I like to help us think about that because I bring that up mostly because our words matter. Be real careful with how you praise a student. Smart is a terrible way to praise them. You did really well at writing this essay. I see you used three examples of what you were talking about, like I asked, that, and you used good grammar throughout. That does not say they're smart. It says they did what you asked. And then the next person, I really appreciate how you played as a team in basketball. Not you're smart at basketball or something. Be specific, right? Because all of us are good at different things. So two things. One, book work. We tend to do a lot of our schoolwork in book work, in books, and so that kind of matters to most of us. Two, speed. How much does speed prove anything about smartness? What does speed prove in terms of book work? It's only that I have it in long-term memory and can pull it out right away. I don't have to think it through. It's just there and I can pull it out. It just means we've memorized things. So does that make me smart? Might make me good at memorizing, but smart, I hesitate to believe it has anything to do with that. So especially in math, that's my pet subject. In math, speed is not anything about smart. It just means that they've memorized things. All right, so how do children get their self-worth? And what are three ways to build my student self-worth? I want to talk to just a little bit as a group about how do children get their self-worth. And then you're going to talk together about however many ways to build my student self-worth. How do we get self-worth? How many of you have read a book on self-worth or something down that line? Like how we, so some sort of human book, humanities book, counseling book, something like that. Okay, so you guys all have those correct answers. Who has a quick answer there in a sentence or two? How do we get our self-worth? Anybody but children.
I think it has a lot to do with like childhood experiences, like early life experiences.
Do you want to be a little bit more specific?
So like if you're neglected,
okay,
you're probably not going to have high self-worth because like my mom didn't care enough about me to take care of
okay.
me. Or she mm-hmm. cares about mm-hmm.
or drugs, but yeah.
Yeah, or that. So mm-hmm.
Okay, good answer. Other answers?
I mean, obviously, we all say our self worth comes from God, but
beyond, we say that.
Yeah, but like going a little bit more of like on a daily level than that, your human relationships.
Mm-hmm.
the biggest influencer in most people's.
So people tell me about my worth?
No.
Or act about my worth? Or what are you saying there?
So, and that also goes to what she was saying, if you were ever rejected.
Okay.
Like, any form of rejection tanks self-worth. Mm-hmm. Any form of affirmation builds self-worth. Mm-hmm. Not saying you are worth so much to mm-hmm. me, but saying, hey, good job, or
mm-hmm. okay.
being praised for something academically or in sports, or people find their self-worth in different things.
Okay. And I like that we're thinking both positive and negative here. That's good. How do you lose it? How do you get it? Both are very... Well, sometimes the negative tells us the positive more clearly. Other answers there. How do we get our self-worth?
I'd say it's largely the way the people closest to us act towards us.
Mm-hmm. And you could take that really far, but it tends to be how your parents tell you or act about you. It is the biggest one. It's not the one, but it's one of the biggest ones, yeah. Any other quick answers there? I think we're hitting the right field for sure. I would go so far as to say that we get our self-worth by what other people tell us about ourselves. Or don't. Sometimes. That's not exclusive in any way, but that's a lot of it. And, you know, if we have value in who we are as a child of God, that has a lot to do with Christian people telling us that. That I see the image of God in you. Not in those words usually, but something. So we, parents especially, but we as teachers, kind of surrogate parents, have the ability to really say worth things in terms of negative or positive. Okay, what are three ways I can build my student's self-worth? Go ahead, turn it off to your neighbors.
One thing you can think about is the negative side. How do you undo the negative side if you need more things to talk about?
All right, let's bring it together here. I heard some really good things here going around. A lot of similar places, which is interesting. So who wants to share first? Go ahead.
We talked about two main things, I would say. Specific words of affirmation is one we covered. Being specific, not just saying, hey, good job, but saying you did well in this specific area. And along with that, you know, if a student maybe gives a speech or something, you know, good job on, you know, and good eye contact, and you can, and giving vision with the words mm-hmm. of affirmation. You will be a good public speaker or something like that.
Looking forward to you as pastor.
Yeah. And also another thing we talked about is creating spaces for them to succeed. You know, sometimes there are students who just struggle with concepts or with a, maybe math, but they succeed in other areas, and creating spaces for them to succeed, especially for people who, for students who struggle in areas where the skills that we can never achieve.
Okay. Or did you have more? That's it.
No, that's it.
Yep.
One thing we kind of talked about a bit was, I guess if you have an activity or project or something, and you know a certain part of that project, a certain student will excel at, it's a good thing to maybe let the student that's going to excel at a certain part, let him do that, and but also include that it's still a team effort, where you have multiple people doing what they excel at, spread out as well as possible, I guess, so that, you know, there's a satisfaction in a job well done at the end. We also talked about positive acknowledgement of the things, but, yeah, in word.
Okay, who's next?
Okay. One thing we talked about was a teacher's self-worth and what, how we view ourselves. And also, like, if you're teaching class, and I don't know, this might go over for, like, older students, because I'm envisioning myself trying to teach algebra, I'm sure I would come up with something that I just couldn't figure out. Mm-hmm. So putting forth the effort to say, okay, I don't know, but I will try to figure it out tonight, and I'll tell you tomorrow, can give a student, or can show the student that the teacher is putting forth effort to, in an area that he struggles, mm-hmm. or she, whatever, and so that you can persevere instead of just saying, well, I don't know, it doesn't apply, you don't know. Mm-hmm. And yeah, if you make negative comments about yourself, the child's going to, that'll affect the way they and another one that we talked about was, I think Jonathan Miller talked about this in his session this morning, was being gentle with their struggles, and he gave the story of the child who was failing in language arts, I think it was, and where he was gentle with them and said, we can get through this together, and the child told his mom he expected the teacher to be mad instead of help. Mm-hmm. Okay, being gentle with their struggles and being willing to help them through.
Okay. Next, go. Right here.
So we talked about two main ones. Speaking their love language, get to know them, and what means a lot to them. Words of affirmation or quality time, or whatever it may be. And then also value what they have to give to a class.
All right. Yeah, good.
We had also talked about words of affirmation. Another thing was being interested in what they're interested in, in school and outside of school. See them at church or other places. Give them responsibility in the classroom. Show them, help them realize that you think they are capable. Mm-hmm. And that work. And just accepting them for who they are. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it feels like you just want to fix them.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you can't fix something about them. So you just have to accept them. Yeah.
Okay, good. Let's see, here.
We talked about if you can tell that they're having a bad day, just be there for them, ask them if they want to talk about it. Another one we talked about is throughout the quiet ones, like if it's a lunchtime discussion and there's certain students that always have all their friends stories. Just try to draw out the quiet ones and ask them what they did with their weekend. Another one that was kind of covered with giving things that they excel in.
Mm-hmm. Is that it? You guys didn't talk
about it. Pretty much everything is covered. Words of affirmation, like you said, spending time with them. Some people don't respond to words of affirmation, or it doesn't mean as much to them. So, what do they care about outside of school? Mm-hmm. Can you go do that thing with them,
mm-hmm.
or at least show interest in it, and just build them up about it.
So, you guys are hitting most of the ones I would say have any, or the high impact things. It's a very big deal for the kids when you, I forget how you said it, but outside of school, do stuff with them that they love. And it's hard to get around and do that. I do recognize that. But it is really a big deal when in public school, when I would go to a kid's game and then the next day made a comment on a play they had or something, I had them. For maybe the rest of the week, but I definitely had their attention that day. Just like you cared enough to come to my game. You were there first. They did that. And then, and you actually were paying attention. That's a whole nother thing. and the other thing is, a lot of you said this, using specific words to talk about their specific strengths. We don't do that in our communities, churches very well, so it's a little bit of a weird thing to do, but it's a great thing to work on. I've definitely been working on it. I don't feel like I have any level of success. It's getting easier for me. One of the things I'm working on is talking to my church leaders like that, like specific affirmations of things they do. That's a whole nother thing for me. It's getting easier, but it's a skill or a comfort level you develop maybe because we're just kind of not used to it as communities. We've kind of hit the disrespect self-worth kind of come and go together.
seeing who somebody is as a person, saying that's good, tends to alleviate disrespect. Yeah, I guess one of the things with knowing our students, spend the first part of your year getting to know your students. That's more important than content sometimes. That's especially you people with experience go at your own pace, but you people that don't have as much experience, it's very valuable. Again, research says working on relationships, working together the first part of their year makes so that you get further academically. So important to think about. All right. My whole situation here doesn't love each other. But motivation is our next point there. And I think it's kind of closely related with self-worth as well. But I want you guys to do more of the talking about it than me, like normal. I did have a thing or so I wanted to say about it, though. So once it opens, I'll say that. Oh, and somebody mentioned the bit, one of my two key points. Do you guys remember my two key points in helping a child move ahead in whatever behavior thing it is? Care over time. And over here they said stable teachers. Yeah. Your self-worth is a big deal in the classroom. And so have your three friends tell you about your self-worth, and if they don't, find three more friends. Yeah, you need that. We all do. All right, so let's see. Where are we at? Motivation. I've had various discussions about motivation here this week, and you probably have too. But one of the things I keep coming back to in motivating our kids to do school day after day, week after week, the whole year long, you need the parents on board. The parents need to see school as valuable. If they don't, it comes sneaking right back. And why can't I just quit school and go to work? And I can make more money without school, and lots of other thoughts come out. So helping your parents, having your parents realize the value of school. I mean, your church realize the value of school is huge. You going to make another comment?
Yeah, I want to know how you do that.
Work on it. I work on it. Yeah, I'm not going to go down that. But yeah, no, there's not an easy answer. We'd all do the easy answer.
Teach for 15 years and then get the next generation in your church.
You want to say it once and drop down.
And unfortunately, a number of the dropouts are leaders in your church. Not necessarily preachers, but leader people in your church, typically.
So what do we say to the bad children? Hey, you're going to be a preacher.
Say
affirmation.
Say your leadership quality is the kind of people that I see become change and back to look casting some vision, right? Your sort of leadership quality, your ability to go against the flow, which I'm hating right now, can make a good leader later. All right. Hey, it actually works. Okay, so I said this. Another thing that matters with motivation, and I think it happens in our schools almost more, it happens in every school, is presenting quality work for students to work hard and struggle with. Work hard on and struggle with. I can use good grammar. Your students know when they have too many math practice problems, and they get bored about it, and they fuss. So, again, I'm using a math example there, but give them quality work that they know is helping, like helping them learn. Not that they all want to learn everything, but if it's boring work, if it's busy work, motivation just went out the window. I've seen that many times. So this is your talking point. What two techniques have you used to motivate? Make that as broad as you want. It doesn't have to be just motivating students. So talk with your group. What two techniques have you used to motivate? And you can use the one I gave them, M&Ms, as one of your two. Please don't use it
in reality, but if you did, that's
So share with each other techniques you've used.
I'm a secretary, but then like I randomly go do my music classes and art classes.
Okay, we're going to wrap it up in a minute, so pick your speaker if it isn't already obvious.
Because you have a three-person group.
Okay, let's kind of bring it together. Finish your sentence you're saying right now, and then we'll share. Go ahead, finish your sentence. You guys went a lot of different places with this, so that's great. I'm glad to hear that. Some of you dived way into motivation and how you can do that. And that's good. Let's see. We'll just kind of start and go around the room this time. So you're last, sorry. Or David, yeah, go.
So some of the things we talked about, we've got a few more than two, was providing fresh or content that they haven't heard something about. And then using group rewards to an extent. That can be taken too far. Set goals for them or have them set their own goals.
That's a big one. Write that down.
Creating curiosity, making them want to learn about something, and then just having interest in it yourself.
Kids love, or yeah. How many of you know Dana Atkinson? Over next door, yeah. His level of interest in bugs makes us all interested in bugs if you hang around him long. Go over there and just hang around him a little bit if you want to see what I mean. Yeah. Our curiosity wears off. Thank you. Your group here.
Just a few things we mentioned that have worked for us. One was out of school activities, spending time with the kid, which we connect to the self-worth, mm-hmm. improved motivation in school. Promise of a reward, like, hey, you're curious about this. If we have time at the end of class, we can look this up. One of the silliest one that ever worked for me was accidental. I had a first grader who was by himself in a class and was unmotivated to say the right answer when you're doing the review. There was no one there to. So we had a Mr. Sentence, and I started asking Mr. Sentence questions. And then my first grader would answer for Mr. Sentence by saying the wrong answer. And then I'd look at him and be like, oh, what do you think? And then he would say the right answer. So, the competition, but having a companion there to mm-hmm. work with. Hmm.
It's interesting to have that.
So, a few that we touched on was taking recess privileges.
Okay.
Staying after school. Or if one half all of us if we get certain we just have the goal feel next to privileges. Mm-hmm. Offer incentive for let's say raising your report score by a few points, like for grades.
Mm-hmm.
But on that level.
Mm-hmm. I have comments about grades, but you'll have to ask me about them later. Be careful with putting too much worth on grades because grades Amen. And smart go together. Okay. And we could talk about that at length. Go ahead into the back, whoever there. Or you're done, right? Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Some things we talked about. Students are often motivated by choices. If you give them a choice, let them choose something, then they own that and they'll often try a little harder at it. And a lot of things that could motivate us, well, a lot of the consequences, especially the most important ones, could be really long-term
mm-hmm.
and hard for students to conceptualize. They can seem really abstract to young people. Mm-hmm. So to try to break down, a goal into increments, that are on a time scale that students can comprehend, so that they can see results. On a time scale that is meaningful to them. And we agreed that external motivation is pretty limited, and the internal motivation is that's really where things happen, and ultimately that is also really hard. And it's very, very often going to involve some positive input from parents to really make that happen.
And your example, Peter, might be helpful in terms of choices. So I heard you say, for example, give two essay prompts that either serve my purpose fine, but what do you want to do? What serves your purpose better? And let the student be the author of their own purpose there a little bit. And that you could take that in a bunch of different ways. Two different math problems that look different but really hit the same issue.
Or even something like, out of this set of math problems, choose five.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas often I'll just say, do all the odd number ones.
Mm-hmm.
But they like it so much better if I say choose. Mm-hmm. That they end up doing the same number, but since they got to choose, they like it so much better.
Got to be a little careful with different curriculums because sometimes they add the times zero things or something. Like, and the kids always go looking for the zeros, which can be an interesting discussion with kids. Like, so do you feel you're incapable of doing reasonable work? You know, you have to do the easy ones. Anyway, next.
We talked about making the lessons creative, switching things up every once in a while, being able to do assignments different. Having classes outside or maybe just directly addressing the issue and asking the student why they are not motivated to get their work done and what's behind it. Removing distractions to help them stay on task and maybe setting goals for them.
Setting goals with them or for them?
For them, with them. They can set their own.
And it's not all bad to set goals for kids, but it's most powerful to set goals with kids. Here.
So one thing that we found out last year that helped a lot was ask the parents for ideas.
Mm-hmm.
The parents on board with it, the children get a lot more motivated.
Mm-hmm.
And something else that I've used quite a bit is timers. You don't have to use that day in and day out for the entire time. But sometimes just being a little bit of competition is going to help. And then giving them maybe a few clues about what they're going to be learning in the next few months or in the next grade. And help them get excited about work again.
And so I'll maybe say math. Learning about volume or area of a circle can extend to something else. And you said, we need to learn this because I want to work on something later. That kind of idea, you can, what you're saying, like, think of, you just have to think a little bit more, what are we going to use this for later in the year? Tell the kids about it. Prep them. Yep, it's a good one. Here.
All y'all already covered most of what we talked about, but we did talk about the variety. Like, if you look at the core concept of what you're trying to teach, and my wording is partly plagiarized, but anyway, then you think about a different way you could do it than just how your textbook standard method, like, could you, what would be, like, variety, a new way for them to accomplish the goal of the lesson. And the other thing that has worked for me some is just, like, being honest with them, like, hey, y'all, good job, you pulled the average on your tests for science up like 1 point from the last test. And then it's not like, oh, I failed, even if my test grade went down. They kind of like the team work that we all did this together. And just I took the time to tell them that they did better than last time.
That's a good way to use grades. There's not a whole lot of good ways, but that's a good way. The whole team is getting better at this. All right, so, this isn't on again, whatever. The next one's adoption. It came up enough times in your list that I thought it might be worth saying a couple things about adoption, and if you want to write some things down, go for it. So, what's the big truth that adopted kids struggle with?
At least they think it's the truth. We already talked about it, but let's write it down.
Rejection.
That my parents don't want me or love me, whichever way you want to say it. And it doesn't matter if you tell them that that's false, or if their parents tell them that's false. There's lots of... That's just a fact that you need to be thinking about when you have an adopted kid. For the sake of time, we're not going to talk about it, but how have you been impacted by adoption would be an interesting thing to talk about. First off, you seem to have been adopted into God's family. How's that working out? Do you always feel at home there? In your church, in your group of people you live around? Yeah. The rejection thing isn't quite there the same, but like fitting in isn't the way most of us feel all the time. So it's something to think about. You can write whatever notes you want there. I want to talk a little bit about what I call direct instruction in behavior. So direct instruction, telling you exactly what I want you to do or understand or know. So children do appreciate being told exactly what's expected and then being held to it. In a consistent manner. So as a daycare person, we tell our two-year-olds, and as you, as an older sibling, you tell your little sibling exactly what you'd like different sometimes. Sometimes we need to do that with our teenagers too. So you're engaging in a disrespectful behavior when you do this. I just need to say the objective truth, right? That's all I'm trying to say. And I expect you not to use those words with your friend again. That doesn't mean that the behavior stops, but you do bring clarity to it. So doing some sort of direct instruction there can be important. Another one might be like, so I'm unable to direct you as we work through this lesson. You are distracting class. I'm unable to direct you. I have to ask you to go to the principal. I mean, but, you know, be clear, direct with what's going wrong and what you would like. We do better with what's going wrong. We do worse with saying, I would like you to sit here quietly and only talk when I have asked the class to talk. So especially bad cases or cases that kind of are persistent, very specific words is very helpful. And so the second point is kind of a note on that. So we're talking kind of about social, emotional kind of behaviors, and some people are just better at catching that than others. I, probably because I'm geeky enough, I'm kind of bad at catching some social cues. Some people are just better at it. Some people are worse. Some of us need to be told directly, like, that thing there, just you ought to work on it. Time still. What direct instruction statements might you make? You can do that on your own. So I want to hit this one just a little bit because it came up in some of your notes. I am a what? You should fill the word, you fill the blank with the word beginner. I am a beginner at dealing with disorders. You do not have the qualifications or tools needed to deal with disorders. Some of you have more experience than others. But if you're still continuing to have a problem with it, it means that you don't have enough tools in your tool bag to deal with it. And for me to just recognize the fact that I'm a beginner at this, I need some training, some tools, whatever, it's kind of freeing for me, back to kind of the emotional weight of some kids not getting where we think they should. I don't have the tools and training needed to help this kid. Now, can we get the training we need? It's a good thing to say, hey, principal, school board, whoever kind of you're talking to, I would like to help this kid more, but I don't feel like I have the resources I need, the training I need, that whatever it would be. Can you help me? So being able to declare yourself a beginner, I need the tools and training to deal with. You could apply this to a lot of situations, but disorders in particularly,
Be fair to yourself and say that. My encouragement to you. And then, yeah, kind of, do you have a group supporting you in this, dealing with this, what I would call a disorder? Something that is persistent and you don't have the tools to work on. All right. And my encouragement to you, here's my encouragement to you. You can just read it. Are you God? You're part of the solution, not the whole solution. Self-care, stability is important as you work with this kind of ongoing trouble, problem kids, if you want to call it that. The length of time is more important than the quality of intervention. Again, that goes back to my rules that are kind of my made-up rules. But length of time seems to impact kids more than the quality. Consistent love over time is more important than an excellent tool. You do need to use the whole team. Please don't take stuff on yourself. Pass the burden up the chain of command. Go to your principal, go to your school board, whoever that is. And then connect, I talked about already, connect with each other for support. Connect with your 3 people a lot. Connect with your 12 people some. And connect with a big group of people intermittently, like when you come to Teachers Week or go to Teachers Conference or whatever. I've enjoyed, all I'm learning from you guys and the discussions we've had over the week. So thank you for joining in and sharing that kind of thing. Please use your resources, which are you, but it has a lot to do with the people around you too, as you go this year in your school.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at christianlearning.org or call 814-789-4769. Many Faith Builders recordings are also available on the Doc for Learning at thedocforlearning.org.